This podcast is made possible by thousands of dedicated listeners just like you. Be a part of this powerful three-decade legacy of evangelization by visiting materdeiradio.com or downloading the Hail Mary Media app. And thank you for joining us on the bridge between your faith and everyday life.
Bringing you a common sense and fresh perspective to creating a just society. This is Common Sense on Social Justice. You'll get equipped with the tools you need to carry out social justice right where you are. Now, here's the host of Common Sense on Social Justice, Michael Davis.
And thank you so much once again for joining us. I am so glad you are here. As always, it's a beautiful sunny day here in the Pacific Northwest as I record this, and I hope things are looking bright where you are. So, a question as we get into our continued study of Quadragesimo Anno by Pope Pius XI. Question, do you know how to juggle? So hopefully, as listeners, some of you at least know how to juggle. I know how to juggle up to three tennis balls. Add a fourth one and I'm dropping the ball, so to speak. But it is fascinating to watch people juggle several swords or bowling pins, things of that sort. I was looking it up and the world record set in 2012 for juggling balls was set by Alex Barron in the United Kingdom. He juggled 11 balls and achieved 23 consecutive catches before dropping a ball. So that's pretty impressive. I wouldn't have a clue how to juggle 11 balls just with one catch. So that's juggling things. And today, Pope Pius XI in Quadragesimo Anno tries to juggle something that societies have struggled with. And that is, how do you achieve the balance between private property and ownership and see to the needs of the common good at the same time without creating a socialist state and without caving into rugged individualism? So on the one hand, ownership of private property. On the other hand, seeing to the needs of the common good while neither caving into socialism or into rugged individualism. And that is quite a feat, but he pulls it off, as we'll study paragraphs 44 through 49 of this encyclical today. Now, in paragraph 44, we are reminded right away of the warning of Pope Leo XIII in his encyclical that we studied before, who said that taking away of private property and the giving in to socialism would not only not help the working class, but would actually gravely harm the working class. So socialism claims to be in favor of the working class, but Pope Leo XIII, and of course we're reminded by Pope Leo or Pius XI, that socialism actually does quite the opposite. It gravely harms the working class, which by now history has repeatedly shown us. And yet there are those who ignorantly and blindly follow and cannot see socialism, and I am surprised, well, maybe I shouldn't be, but I'm surprised by the great number of Americans who support socialism. Like I said, maybe I shouldn't be so surprised because people are indoctrinated in our public school system now. In fact, public schools aren't really education centers anymore in public universities either. Rather, they tend to be more indoctrination centers to indoctrinate people to the agenda of the government. And the government, of course, wants total control of our lives. It happens through socialism and communism, and therefore people support it, but history bears it out that socialism just doesn't work and it causes grave harm, especially to the poor and to the working class. Then Pope Pius XI goes on to say that many have made false accusations against Pope Leo XIII and against the church, saying that the church is just defending the rich in Rerum Novarum. But nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, if you look at the history of the Catholic Church, right from the beginning, the first century, right at the beginning, The church was built really mostly with the poor. The poor were very attracted to Christianity right from the beginning. And that's really what is kind of a weird phenomenon, I guess you could say, in history, that it is this Christianity that was built with the poor and uneducated. I mean, just look at the 12 disciples, and yet they achieved being one of the major factors of the collapse of the Roman Empire. And so you have these uneducated, poor people, and throughout history, the church has always been about defending the poor. I think of St. Paul, who was asking James and Peter and John for permission to go out and spread the gospel among the Gentiles, and they gave him permission with this one caveat. He had to take care of the poor wherever he went. And what was St. Paul's response? Which was, "The very thing I was eager to do." So right from the beginning, the Catholic Church has been about the poor. I mean, we've got, good grief, we've got St. Teresa of Calcutta and many others, St. Catherine Drexel. St. Catherine Drexel, a very wealthy woman who gave her wealth away to the poor Native Americans, and, you know, would even drink day-old coffee so that she has no comfort for herself. And so for people to make this false accusation that the Catholic Church was defending the rich in this encyclical is just, it's, nothing could be further from the truth. So Pope Pius XI says that he is here to clear things up and to defend both Pope Leo and the church from these false accusations and false interpretations. Now in paragraph 45, he states that Pope Leo nor the church have ever denied that private property has two aspects to it. So here's the two aspects for ownership of private property. It exists for two reasons. First, the support of the individual and their family, and the needs of the common good. So for private property, and we studied this in the last encyclical we looked at, but if you own private property, it exists for you and you, to meet your needs and your family, but beyond that, you use your property to bless society. But notice, it's not the government forcing you into the common good. It's you voluntarily, from the goodness of your heart, doing that. And he starts with the foundation that God has given us all the right, all of us, the right to private property, but that we should use this for the purpose of not only supporting ourselves, but for the distribution to the good of all. We see in the book of Acts how the early Christians would sell their properties and take the money and lay it at the apostles' feet, and then the apostles would take it and divvy up the money to support the poor and support those who were in need. And a lot of people will use that passage in Acts to support socialism, but it wasn't at all. We don't see any indication that the apostles were forcing the Christians into doing this. It's just that people, and it would say from time to time, people would sell their properties. In other words, they voluntarily did it. In fact, St. Paul says in the scriptures to give without compulsion, but rather be a cheerful giver. In other words, voluntarily, cheerfully giving because you have something to give. The second point that's brought out in paragraph 45 is that the universal distribution of goods cannot be realized any other way than through ownership of private property. So if people are all forced into being renters, then we have nothing to give for the good of society. But if we all own property, then we've got some way of blessing society. For example, if I live in an apartment complex, I can't grow pear trees, right? But if I own enough property, I could have a pear orchard. And then instead of just making money off of the sale of those pears, which I will, I'll sell them to stores or whatever, but I also want to take some of the extra I have and give it to the poor and just bless society with those that orchard or whatever means. That's just a simple example, but there's many ways we could do that. By the way, I've looked at studies and it appears that wildfires, which I live in a western state, so we have lots of wildfires here in Oregon, but wildfires can be greatly reduced by eliminating publicly owned forests. In fact, when I go hiking, and I love hiking, but when I go into hiking into the public forests in Oregon, they are junky. I mean, those forests are junked up with a lot of undergrowth and fallen trees and limbs everywhere. Well, that's just tinder waiting for a fire to happen. You know, and they're just junky. And then when you go into the privately owned forest in Oregon, I don't mean trespassing into them. I just mean when you observe these forests, they're clean. They're cleaned up. Why? Because the owners of that forest don't want their forest on fire. And they don't want diseased trees. So they cut down the diseased trees. They keep the ground clean so that there's not tinder for fires, like during lightning storms and such. And so these studies show that eliminating publicly owned forests can greatly reduce wildfires. Because why? Private owners tend to be better stewards of their land than the government can be. We all know the government isn't great at doing things well. And so, we want to be more efficient with the distribution of goods. You can do that how? Through private ownership of property. And then the third point he brings out in this is that all this can only happen through the creation and maintenance of a certain order. So he does admit that the Pope does that government is needed to a very limited degree. The ownership of private property and the universal distribution of goods is not realized in a random way, but can only happen through a societal agreement. So the statement by the Pope eliminated both socialism and rugged individualism in one fell swoop. And I loved it. When I read this, I was like, wow, in just one phrase, one statement, he eliminates socialism and rugged individualism. Because he says, yes, individually, you can own private property. However, you should use your property for the common good. How does that happen? Through very limited government involvement to help create a societal agreement around private property. So boom, no socialism. Why? Limited government involvement. No rugged individualism. Why? Because yes, you have your private property, but you're connected to a bigger ecosystem than just yourself. Now in paragraph 46, he says there are what he calls twin rocks of shipwreck that must be avoided in a just society. And the twin rocks of shipwreck are individualism and collectivism. He says that neither one of them are good, neither individualism or collectivism. So you may have like the United States of America being an individualistic society. Of course, you have China through communism being a collectivist society. India tends to be a collectivist society, although it tends more towards individualism as well. But he states that both individualism and collectivism tend to come about by trying to avoid one or the other. So if you are trying to avoid the shipwreck of individualism, you can end up too close to the rock of collectivism. And if you're trying to avoid collectivism, then you can end up too close to the shipwreck or the rock of individualism. So he says it takes careful and well thought out navigation to create a society that honors both the universal distribution of goods and the right to private property. One of the things that I appreciate about being Catholic is how the Catholic Church is both and in so many things. Catholic Church is not this black and white, either or, it's got to be this or that. It can be both and. So you can achieve both the universal distribution of good and the right to private property. You don't have to throw out one to have the other. But notice, he says it comes about through careful thought and well thought out navigation in society. And that's why, you know, the Catholic Church gets a bum rap about being too slow to make decisions. Well, that's good. What's the church? Why are they so slow in making decisions on things? Because the church wants to use wisdom and put serious thought into things. It's not in a hurry to get to the answer because it wants to get to the right answer. And that takes time. And so instead of just throwing out answers like our modern social justice movements tend to do, I mean, you think about this. There's this. It's either black people or white people. And we got to suppress the white people, raise up the black people, and here's our quick answer. No, that's not good. What if we actually sat down and took our time to think through these racial injustices? We might come up with an answer that would surprise us. And that's beautiful, and that works for everybody. But why don't we come up with these answers to racial injustices? Because we're in such a hurry to blame, to judge, and to just get to an answer without even understanding really what the problem really is to begin with. And the same thing is with private property, with just wages and all these things. It takes time and effort to think through, to pray through, to listen, talk, discuss, and get to the correct answer. Now, in paragraph 47, Pope Pius I reminds, or the 11th rather, reminds us of what Pope Leo XIII taught us in order to avoid the pitfalls of either individualism and collectivism. The right of property is distinct from its use. So now he breaks it down even further that the right to private property is different than the use of private property. So there's several principles he lays out for us here to understand how this all works. First of all, the right to property and the individual use of property fall under different boundaries. Secondly, that the right to property must be protected by the state. The state should not regulate it, but protect the right to private property. Third, the proper use. Now we go from the right to own to the actual use of the property. The proper use of property is under the jurisdiction of the church. So the state, their job is to protect the right to property. The church's job is to help people navigate how to use their property in a just way. However, the church, he states, should never try to enforce by law how to use your property. So the church is just there to guide, not to enforce. So the proper use of property can only come about through a person, he says, who has a virtuous heart. In fact, we learn from the Gospels that Jesus talks about the good and the wicked farmers. So there can be farmers who are good, have good hearts, and some not so virtuous hearts. And then the fourth point he brings out in paragraph 48 is that, 47, is that the right to property falls under the jurisdiction of nature. So remember, the church has jurisdiction over how to use property, but the state has the right to protect the right to private property, but the state doesn't have jurisdiction over it. So nature, he says, has jurisdiction over the right to private property, which then is enforced through the state. All the state's job, he shows, is to support what nature has already determined. And then he says the use of the property falls under the jurisdiction of the heart, enforced by God through the church, not by law, but by proper teaching. So the church's job is to teach how to use your property in a just and virtuous way. And then the fifth point he brings out is those are in error who believe that because someone is abusing their property or failing to use their property and just letting it lie dormant, forfeit their right to property. So let's say you've got a neighbor who owns a lot in your neighborhood and the lot just sits empty. He says that's their right. You don't have a right to tell them they can't own that property, and the state cannot begin raising taxes on them to force them to use their property. He says that's just not so. That's not just. And then the final point he makes in this paragraph is the right to property must only be realized within the boundaries of your property and cannot do harm to your neighbor's property. So you cannot have, for example, a giant tree in your property that's hanging over into your neighbor's property and then branches falling and, for example, damaging your neighbor's shed or something to that nature. So if your tree, for example, is hanging over into your neighbor's property, it is a just thing to trim the branches of your tree to be within the boundaries of your property. That's a simple example, but there's many other examples. For example, I've got a friend who has a farm in the Willamette Valley, and there's this beaver that keeps coming back each year, creating a dam and flooding his farm. Well, if you have a beaver on your property who is flooding your neighbor's property, for example, so let's say there's a creek that runs through several properties, and there's a beaver who has built a dam within the boundaries of your property, and it's flooding your neighbor's property, you have a just requirement to, first of all, what my friend does is trap the beaver, go release the beaver out in nature somewhere else, and then tear apart the dam. So that's an example. Another example would be if you built a structure on your property that's so huge, so big, that it blocks out the sun from your neighbor's property, thus preventing them from growing food. That's another example. So these are just practical things. You see, holiness, we get this idea that holiness is about this pie in the sky and the sweet by and by kind of stuff. No, holiness can be, I'm going to trim the branches on my tree so they don't damage my neighbor's belongings. Holiness, simple, ordinary. Now, in paragraph 48, those who work toward the right to property and the social good use of that property, he says, are doing a great work. And those who seek to limit the individual character of property to the extent of destroying it are in error. So if you're working to limit people's right to property, you are in error. He says, if you're working towards people's right to property, you are doing a great work. And then finally today in paragraph 49, he says, to sum it all up, people must consider in their right to property not only their own advantage, but also the needs of the common good. What a beautiful balance. And he reminds us that the state only steps in on this issue when nature has not been clearly defined certain aspects of private property. The state can only define the proper and improper use of property only after the true needs of the common good have been defined, and only after understanding the requirements of the divine law and natural law. So let's expound on this a little bit. God has set it within nature that there are certain laws, the divine law, that cannot be broken, and that even includes how we use our properties. And there are some things that aren't so clearly defined in nature and have been clearly defined by God, whether in the scriptures or the prophets or whatever. But the state can only intervene after the state has tried to understand the divine law and its requirements and had a healthy discussion to understand what has not been clearly defined. I really don't see our governments doing that these days, do you? And then he states that there is no fixed system around private property or private possessions, for history is full of examples of various ways of approaching this in various points of time, even from ancient times. So he's just saying, you know, there's no fixed system. So, you know, the Pope doesn't like capitalism. He doesn't like socialism, but what he does say is there's no fixed system in place around private property and around private possessions, because he says even from ancient times, different societies have done it different ways. And some of them have been quite creative and pretty cool how they approached it. So he's like, figure it out as a society yourself, but, you know, don't be unwise, but look in the past and see, you know, learn. That's why the cancel culture, that whole silliness is what it is. It's foolishness, because you got to learn from the past. Or as they say, you're doomed to repeat it. But he also states, the Pope does, that one thing that cannot change is the right to private property, the right to pass that property down to your descendants. And as Pope Leo the 13th reminds us in Rerum Novarum, for man is older than the state. The state cannot prevent people from owning the property and passing of their descendants. Why? Because people are older than the state. Therefore, people actually have jurisdiction first before the state. And we are reminded again of Pope Leo the 13th teaching that it is unjust for the state to take property through heavy taxation. And he finishes this section with a wise admonition. First of all, 4 points here. The state, by bringing private ownership into unity with the need of the common good, is not being hostile, but rather is doing a great service to property owners. Secondly, God has given the right to private property. Third, God has not given the right to private possessions of goods. Now, that's a clear distinction. You do not have the right to stockpile unwisely and to hoard what comes from your property. In fact, there's a parable that Jesus gives in Luke 16. Whether this was a real event or just simply a parable, the lesson is still there. You've got this rich man who decides to pile up goods for himself while Lazarus is laid at the gate begging for food, and the rich man is ignoring Lazarus. And you've got this rich man who says, I've got all these barns and I've got all this excess. What will I do? I'll build bigger barns for myself. Well, the lesson from that is that no, God expects us to use the goods from our properties to bless the world. So God has given us the right to private property, but God has not given us the right to private possession of goods. But our goods that God gives us from our properties are for the common good of the world. And then the fourth and final point, that the wise leaders of states are able to both strengthen the right to private ownership and ensure the universal possession of goods. It's not one against the other. It's both and. Now, next time in part four of Quadragesimo Anno, the Pope is going to deal with a specific issue, and that is dealing with the issue of gaining excess capital off of your private property. What happens if you make too much off of your property? What do you do with that excess? St. James says in the scripture that a man looks into the mirror and immediately forgets what he's looking at after walking away from the mirror. Have you ever spent a lot of time in front of the mirror in the morning, then you walk away and start thinking about other things? Well, his conclusion is that when you look into the scriptures and then you forget what it says is the same thing. You need to study intently and live out the scriptures in order to experience their transforming effect. And the same holds true for this encyclical that is filled with so much information that it can guide us into building a just world. So I encourage you to reference this encyclical time and time again, to reference the principles in this encyclical as you create a just society right where you are.
You've been listening to Common Sense on Social Justice with your host, Michael Davis. A common sense and fresh perspective to creating justice where you are. Share your comments and questions with Michael by emailing sjcommonsense@gmail.com. That's sjcommonsense@gmail.com.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with a friend. You can support this vital mission of evangelization through materdeiradio.com or the Hail Mary Media app. And thank you for helping us lead souls to Jesus through the Blessed Virgin Mary.